Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. All of the latest J2 news is coming your way for the next 45 minutes or so. I'm John Steele, hosting this week, and I'm joined by a regular partner in crime these days. It's James Taylor. James, how are you doing?
Hi John, Kanazawa didn't lose for the first time in 6 weekends, so I'm pretty good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, all good, thanks. Yeah, nicely refreshed after a quick family holiday last week. So yeah, all good here, James, thanks. And yes, before we talk about the games that did happen over the J2 weekend, round 32, James, how disappointed were you about that late cancellation of the Kanazawa game against Inform Nagasaki?
Well, actually, I had a ticket for it, but the weather was awful, so I wasn't going to be able to go. And then I saw that it had been cancelled. At first, I thought it was because of the weather, because we've had quite a lot of heavy rain and landslide warnings and stuff around here recently. But it was then I saw it was because of COVID cases at Nagasaki. So hopefully that they can all recover and recover fully and quickly and get back to playing football. And hopefully the extra week will do Kanazawa some good, get more of our COVID players back and healthy, and also maybe an extra week practicing some football might show in results, hopefully.
Sure. Yes, fingers crossed. Yeah, I didn't realise you had that much clout in Kanazawa, that just one phone call from you, you know, fixtures can be shredded. But then, it's good that the real story came out, and that kind of, yeah, that was unfounded speculation that you'd force the cancellation of the game. But I think, yeah, between COVID-19 and bad weather, J2 is ticking along quite nicely, isn't it? We haven't had too many postponements or disruptions, and I think everybody, when we get to the end of the season, we will hopefully be giving the organisers and everybody involved a pat on the back for just getting through the 42 rounds without too much disruption. So, without further ado, James, we'll talk about some of the on-field action from the weekend. We're going to start, we have four games in our Pick of the Week section this time. We're going to start with Niigata 1, Kumamoto 0, at the Big Swan. I think it's fair to say this wasn't a classic encounter, but I don't think Niigata will be too bothered. They took all 3 points thanks to an 18th minute goal from Yota Komi, set up very nicely by the returning Kaito Taniguchi. I know he's been out for about 5 weeks with an injury, so good to see him back and leading the line for Niigata. Just before Komi's crucial goal, Niigata had survived a goalmouth scramble at the other end, and Kumamoto did have the ball in the net in second half stoppage time, but that goal was disallowed for what looked like a pretty clear foul, in my opinion. So not too controversial. And it finished, yeah, Niigata 1, Kumamoto 0. That puts Niigata 7 points clear of third place Sendai with 10 games to go. Things are looking very good for Niigata. Kumamoto still in the playoff places in sixth, but only one win from their last four games. So having a little bit of a wobble, I think it's fair to say. James, what did you make of this one? Niigata 1, Kumamoto 0.
This was interesting because both teams tried to play in their usual way. So Kumamoto tried to attack as they do so well, and Niigata, they tried to play it out the back calmly, and actually that was working against them quite early on. They were the first sort of 15 minutes or so, they were not doing a very good job of it and inviting a lot of pressure from Kumamoto. And actually the weather was pretty bad for this game, and both teams lost possession quite a lot in midfield. A lot of passes were misplaced, or a lot of players trying to take on their man one-on-one and just losing the ball. But I did enjoy the fact that because it was wet, players were taking the opportunity to do loads of slide tackles, which was quite fun. It's a bit like when you're playing on the PlayStation or whatever and you just slide in, every tackle's a slide tackle. That was entertaining. But I think both teams' attacks were a little bit off for this one. Kaito Taniguchi, his radar was a bit haywire for this one. He had a few chances. He had one shot that he dragged quite wide, and he had another shot where he was on about the penalty spot and it went out for a throw-in about 10 yards away from the corner flag. So basically it just went sideways. So that wasn't in the highlights, obviously. It shouldn't be.
Yeah, fair to say he was a bit rusty, I think.
But he did set up Comey for the goal, which was a good counter-attack. Kumamoto lost possession sort of just inside their own half, and the ball came to Taniguchi, and he dribbled towards the edge of the D. And I think it was three defenders were all converging on him, and no one was paying attention to Comey, who ran into space, and Taniguchi played a pass between two of the defenders, and Comey kind of slotted it past the keeper into the far corner. It was a very nicely taken goal. He's actually doing quite well this year, Comey. I saw that he's got 4 goals and an assist from 14 games, which is pretty good. So there's a bit of luck just before that for Niigata, that goalmouth scramble you mentioned. There was a cross that was blocked, and then the keeper managed to grab it before the waiting Kumamoto attacker could do anything with it. And he also, Toshiki Takahashi, the Kumamoto's starting striker, he was a bit off form, you know, in this game. I think he only had one shot, and he couldn't really have any impact on the game. And it was not a classic, like you said, but it was interesting to see how these teams face up to each other, because Kumamoto obviously flying pretty high up in sixth still, and Niigata up in second. So it was, you know, I guess an almost top of the table clash. And I think Kumamoto, maybe they'll be disappointed that they didn't create very much, because they do have a good attack generally. But yeah, playing against Niigata in Niigata, it's not easy, is it? So yeah, I think 1-0 probably a fair result for this one. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that sounds fair to me. I thought Niigata had to grind a little bit more than we've seen from them in previous weeks and in previous seasons. But I do sense, you know, grinding out a 1-0 home win in that fashion at this stage of the season, you know, 10 rounds left to play, that bodes pretty well for automatic promotion, I think. And I've started to feel that they are going to be in the top two come the end of the season. Of course, plenty of time for that to go wrong yet. But I think their squad rotation was quite, you know, interesting for this game. I saw Thomas Deng, who we don't see very often. Not only was he in the team, but he was starting at centre-back. Yeah. I presume that's because Michael James wasn't available. I think fair to say he's better known as a right-sided defender, or possibly even a midfielder. So to see him come in, you know, a player that doesn't play regularly, and then he comes in at centre-back, I thought that was quite a big call.
Yeah.
And then, Taniguchi is obviously a really good player, but hasn't played that much in the last few weeks because of injury, as we said. And then the flank attackers, the wing attackers, were Komi on the left, and is it Shimabuku? Who was starting on the right. So it's kind of a rotation in those attacking positions. But even with that rotation and a few unfamiliar names and unfamiliar faces, or certainly to me as a neutral observer, they still got the job done against a very competent and very dangerous Kumamoto team. And I think that bodes pretty well for Niigata going into this last stretch. And we've mentioned it many times, but to lose Shion Honma midway through the season, and then to have it not really knock them out of their stride particularly, that is, I think, a really big positive and a really good sign that they're going to be a serious, you know, contender for the automatic promotion. I suppose it's not a big call with them 7 points clear of third place, but you get what I'm trying to say, James. They're the real deal, is what I'm trying to say. And at Kumamoto, yeah, they'll be disappointed, but I think you covered it pretty well in your comments there. That Niigata away is one of the, I would argue, is perhaps the most difficult away game because, you know, you're in a big stadium with a lot of home supporters. And Yokohama FC winning a lot of home games, but not quite in the same sort of powerhouse way that Niigata have done. So, I'd say Niigata away, losing 1-0 is not the end of the world. And I think they'll bounce back quite quickly. Let's move on, James, then, to game number two. We're talking of bouncing back. quickly. Gunma 1, Sendai 0 from the weekend. A very surprising defeat for Sendai, who stay third, but as we've already mentioned, they're now 7 points behind Niigata and the automatic promotion places. Potentially, this could be a huge win for Gunma, the first in four matches, and I believe, if I've got this right, listening to the commentary, the first time they've ever beaten Sendai. First ever win over Sendai, which is always nice. The vital goal here came in the 54th minute. Rookie forward Motoki Nagakura heading in Yuya Takagi's left wing cross. Now, Nagakura, he's a very fresh rookie, James. He only made his debut last midweek away at Yokohama FC. So this was his first pro goal. He doesn't even have his picture up yet on the J-League website. You just get this kind of faceless shadow. And you have to imagine what he looks like. And the Yokohama FC connection is strong because Yuya Takagi, who assisted the goal, he's on loan from Yokohama FC since he's not getting any game time at Mitsuzawa. I thought this was a narrow win in the end at 1-0, but a deserved one for Gunma based on the balance of play. They had plenty of chances, especially in the first half. Junya Kato hitting the crossbar, and Koki Kazama and Nagakura missed some good headers. The golden chance that you thought might come back to haunt them was a penalty that Gunma were given just before half time. It was well saved by Yuma Obata in the Sendai goal. The penalty came about after Yasuhiro Hiraoka tripped the lively Nagakura inside the penalty area. Gunma nearly made it 2-0 late on, but Ryo Yamamoto, he's still doing what he was doing when he was on loan at Okayama last year, you know, taking Hollywood-style pot shots from outside the penalty area. His curling strike came back off the crossbar, so that could have made it 2-0 to Gunma, but it didn't go in. It finished Gunma 1, Sendai 0. Gunma out of the relegation zone now, level on 30 points with Iwate, who are second bottom, but Gunma have a much superior goal difference, don't they? I think they're about 13 or 14 goals better off. James, Gunma 1, Sendai 0. What did you think?
I think this was a tactical masterclass from Tsuyoshi Otsuki, Gunma manager, in how to beat Sendai. Because we know that they can be got at. We know that Sendai, their defence is leaky. And so Gunma went at them straight from the off. They went at them early, and they should have been 2 or 3 up in the first 20 minutes. I think they have those good chances you mentioned all came early on. But they didn't take them. And I was wondering, well, maybe that will come back to haunt them because Gunma's attack is weak. It's the weakest in the league in terms of goals scored. They've only scored 24 goals from 32 games. Sorry, but and at first half drinks, the stats they showed in the top corner on DAZN, the Gunma had 28% of possession, but it had 4 shots, whereas Sendai with 72% possession had only had 1 shot. So, I'm not sure if it was. Well, I think it was partly Gunma were playing well and going at Sendai when they had the chance, but I think also Sendai were having a bit of an off day. I think it's interesting to contrast this Gunma performance with the way Omiya and Kanazawa played against Sendai in the previous games. Omiya also went at Sendai early and took a 3-0 lead, but their defence, I think it's fair to say, perhaps is not as solid as Gunma's, and that's why they conceded those 2 late goals to make it a tight finish, whereas Gunma were able to see this one out. And Kanazawa obviously fell apart from the start and lost 4-1. Absolute opposite. That's a blueprint of how not to play against Sendai, whereas this was definitely a blueprint of how to play against Sendai. I think, yeah, partly it was Sendai were not good and partly they were not allowed to play well. And I think what's really important for Gunma is that they have to score first. I saw a stat that they've only taken 1 point from games where they concede first, which is obviously the worst in J2. Worst record for teams conceding first. There are a few teams that haven't won, but Gunma have only drawn 1 match and lost a lot where they concede first. And I think It was good to see Nagakura get that goal. It was a good header, but he managed to find space at the back post. It was also a really good cross from Yuya Takagi, who I thought played very well. He got into some good attacking positions on the left. So that was good to see. I think that bodes well for Gumre. But it's only one win. They need to get more than one. They need to string a few together, because it's no use winning a game and then going and losing the next three. It doesn't get them out of trouble. But I think I watched the game last Tuesday against Yokohama FC, and they lost that one. You were at that game, weren't you? They lost that 1-0 to a fairly soft goal quite early on. But for the last 30 minutes, Gunma had all the ball, and Yokohama FC couldn't get out of their own half. And I think I saw Gunma had 68% possession for that last half an hour, but they didn't do anything with it. They couldn't create any good chances because their attack is not very good.
Yeah, I think that's very good analysis on Gunma and good stats to back it up. I get the feeling that they're the kind of team where if they score first, holding on for a 1-0 win. Well, I guess they weren't exactly holding on against Sendai, because they did try and swashbuckle as much as they could under the circumstances. But I think when they concede first, you could see the Yokohama FC game last week. It did kind of deflate them, letting in a softish goal, in just the ninth minute. But it took them a really long time to recover from that. But when they did, I mean, I was sitting behind the goal in the Yokohama FC end, if you like, with the home supporters, and the tension in that last half an hour was absolutely excruciating, because it just looked like any minute, every time Gunma attacked, it looked like they were going to score. Yokohama FC were really wobbling under some pretty sustained pressure. I think Gunma just lack good finishers. Whether it's sensible to rely on a youngster like Nagakura going into the run-in is debatable. But I think the other forwards, Shu Hiramatsu, they have good kind of, they're good players, but I'm not sure if there's any finish. I mean, we'll talk later about Takuma Abe, for example, at Ryukyu, and it's a drum that I've banged for a long time. I think a finisher like him can be the difference. But yeah, like you said, the challenge for Gunma now is they have demonstrated with this win, and also in other matches. I mean, I think the game we're talking about where they got a point, they were 3-0 down to Yokohama FC, weren't they? And came back and got a 3-3 draw. So they have got it in them. They do have the ability to score more than one goal in a match. And they do have the ability to win games. But they just need to do it a bit more consistently, like you said. And I don't think they really want to be relying on surviving on goal difference from Iwate, do they? They need a few more points and a few more wins. But they even had the luxury of missing a penalty and still beat Sendai. So if they're not full of confidence after that, then when will they be full of confidence? But yeah, they were surprisingly impressive, if that makes sense, in the game that I saw away at Yokohama. And I actually felt the same here, where I thought in that first 15 minutes, they pretty much caught Sendai completely cold, didn't they? Yeah. And a better side would perhaps have been two or three goals up, at the drinks break in the first half. So, plenty of positives for Gunma from that game and for Sendai. I don't think they need to panic too much. I think they played pretty poorly. How much of that was their own sluggish start, and how much of that was the tactics from Gunma? It's difficult. It's always difficult to know where the balance is with that, isn't it? But I think they do need to be very careful, because any more slip-ups like that, if that gap, which is 7 points now between third and second, if that becomes 10 or 11 points as the number of games ticks down, I mean, they're starting to look like they're going to finish third, right? And the team that finishes third generally doesn't do very well when it comes to the playoffs. I've really sat on the fence there, haven't I? It's not time to panic, but it is time to get ready to panic. It's basically what I said.
Yeah, I think on Sendai, there's first of all, that penalty was a definite penalty. There were 9 Sendai players who surrounded the referee afterwards. I don't know if that was in the highlights, but that 9 of them went and demanded, and one of them was gesturing, like making the gesture to say, "Oh, he got the ball, he got the ball." Did not get the ball. Miles away from the ball. Kicked the bloke in the side of the knee. So I don't see what the dispute was there, and I don't see why nine of them had to go. But aside from that, so Sendai's last three games have been against Kanazawa, Omiya, and Gunma, all teams that are struggling against relegation, and they managed a win and two losses. I don't think those are performances of a team that's going to finish in the top two. I think their poor defence has come back to haunt them now, and I think that's a phrase we're using a lot in there tonight. I think that, 7 points is not a massive gap, but I don't think Yokohama FC and Niigata will go on a long enough losing run in the final 10 games for Sendai to overtake them. And I think they're going to finish in the playoffs.
They're just not quite consistent enough to make you feel like they're going to make up that gap between themselves and the top. You almost think even if something goes badly wrong at Yokohama or Niigata, maybe it's Okayama who are going to come through, nip into the top two. So, yeah, I don't know. Before the season started, I was very lukewarm on Sendai. So in a weird way, they're actually doing a bit better than I expected. But I think from what I can remember talking to other people, I was kind of on the low end of expectations for Sendai. A lot of other people thought playoffs were definite. Yeah. But automatic promotion might be tricky, and that's kind of how it's panned out. So, we'll see. You know, 10 games to go. That's 30 points, and a lot can happen. But yes, I think what would concern Sendai is the manner of this defeat. Where I don't think, they might have snatched a draw. You know, when you lose a game 1-0, you always feel like you maybe could have had a point, right? But they didn't really do enough. They didn't really earn one. I don't think so. That's something that they'll be wanting to put right fairly quickly. James, what about game number three then from round 32 that we want to talk about? It might seem like a strange choice at first, but bear with us and we'll explain why in a moment. So another 1-0 home win. That's our third one in a row this week. Yamaguchi 1, Mito 0. Two major talking points in this game, the first of which came in just the 6th minute when Yamaguchi's Wataru Tanaka, he did a madness, didn't he, James? He scored an absolute goal of the season, contender for Yamaguchi. When the ball ran loose to him a few yards inside his own half, he took a touch to control it and then beautifully chipped Mito's goalkeeper, the confusingly named Rui Yamaguchi, for 1-0. I make this better than Thiago Alves' goal for Okayama early on in the season. I think possibly it's some recency bias for me, but I think, this is my favourite goal of the season so far. So Yamaguchi 1-0 up early doors, and then just before half-time, Yamaguchi's Takayuki Mae was shown a straight red card for a studs-up tackle on Ryosuke Maeda, which meant that the hosts had to play out the rest of the game with just 10 men, which, if we're being honest, they did very well, and they hung on for a pretty important 1-0 win. Yamaguchi 1, Mito 0 was the final score. Mito coach Tadahiro Akiba, JTET favourite, of course, he was absolutely furious with the players in his post-game interview, incandescent with rage, and he gave them all a very public dressing down, didn't he, for about 2 minutes. It's well worth watching online, even if you don't speak Japanese. You don't need to speak a word of Japanese to get the message in that interview. So, first win in 8 matches for Yamaguchi, which is good news, but they're not out of the woods just yet, are they? They're 17th, but only 5 points clear of that relegation zone. James, I know you watched this game, Yamaguchi 1, Mito 0. Take it away.
Yeah, that's again not a classic, but a fantastic defensive effort from Yamaguchi, particularly in the second half. The goal was very well taken, very quick thinking to spot the goalie off his line and to get it on target. A lot of players would not have managed to do that. The red card just before half time was an obvious red, but what amused me was Maya's reaction was, Why? But his studs connected with the midpoint of his opponent's shin. Like, there's no doubt about that. It's a red card. And what was interesting was that even before that, that was in the 44th or 45th minute. Even before that, Mito had started to take control of the game. And Yamaguchi actually didn't have any shots after the 30-minute mark. Or no shots on target, anyway. And so Mito took control, but they didn't do anything. They didn't really create that much in terms of goal-scoring opportunities. And the ones they did create, they either wasted or they fluffed or whatever. And I think that's perhaps indicative of, I don't know, Mito, they're in 11th, which is their rightful place. They're a mid-table team. They always have been, and I'm sure they always will be. And I'm not denigrating that. I think that's an excellent thing. I would love to be a mid-table team supporter. But they're not as
sexy.
Yeah, well, I was going to say swashbuckling in attack as they have been in the previous couple of years. They're more sort of quietly, steadily going about their business rather than playing like 4-4 draws or whatever that they have been in the last few years. And I get them. I think the main talking point with the goal from inside his own half, the red card. The other talking point is the post-match interview with Akiba. What you very rarely see a manager so angry that he's actually shouting his answer. The question, the first question was, any positives from the game? And he was saying, Naimo nai, saite na game. And there was absolutely no positives, absolutely dreadful. It was a dreadful game. And he went on to say stuff, there was no effort to win the ball, no excuses. You can't blame the fact that we're away. You can't blame the rain. This was rubbish. We'll see tomorrow in training what the players have to say and what they've learned from this. He was extremely angry. And what was... Well, I've never seen that. I've seen that clip of Roy Hodgson off air. someone asked him a question, so he's not pissed about or whatever. And but it's very rare for these things to actually be broadcast.
I was thinking of a Giovanni Trapattoni when he was Bayern Munich manager, and he gave a press conference in watch. I think it's very bad German from I don't speak German or Italian. I'm not very good at languages, so I'm perhaps not the best place to be. It had it had Trapattoni at Bayern Energy, didn't it?
Yeah, but without the like slamming fist on the desk kind of thing or any of that. But what was, I think it's refreshing to see emotions like this from a manager compared to, like, I know we've mentioned before, Kanazawa manager Masaaki Yanagishita is often quite terse and comes off as a bit rude to the interviewers when he's, you know, watched Kanazawa lose, which is quite often. And in this case, I mean, shouting is maybe not the most dignified way to deal with it, but it, I mean, it's better than the usual cliches or ref bashing that you get from other managers in this league and in other leagues and other countries. Mm. And whatever he said to them on Sunday and Monday obviously worked, because you'll cover this in the roundup. Spoiler alert: they won on Tuesday. Was it Tuesday night? Yeah,
it was. Yeah.
No. And in the post-match interview there, he's come out with, this is Mito Holyhock. And he went on from there. It got really emotional, talking about you know, the effort from the team and the way that they've turned things around in just two, having just 2 days off, and thanking the supporters for coming and stuff like that, sticking with them and things like that. It was good to see the manager cares, I think, because we don't often get to see that with these interviews. They come off and they've just had, you know, they've only just finished the game. They've got other things on their mind and they're speaking cliches, but it's good to see something more than that, I think.
Well, I think it's amazing. I mean, you made that point, and it's something that I wanted to mention, is in a very pressurized situation like football management, of course, you know, it's just the game, it's sport, it's entertainment, whatever, but it's their jobs, it's their livelihood. Mm-hmm. When you've had a bad game and things have gone wrong, to have the microphone kind of thrust into your face 5 minutes after the final whistle, or sometimes it, you know, less time than that. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of amazed we don't see more managers like kind of losing it, to be honest. It's kind of impressive that they're often so composed, or they even remember their training and give the kind of stock answers. Mm. As often as they do. So, yeah, I really enjoyed seeing Akiba kind of go off the chain a little bit. And I think what's important to mention as well, and you talked about honesty, I think, in your comments, and it's like, yeah, he didn't say anything that was, like, not true.
Mm.
You know, I think if you'd given... I mean, there won't be any market for Mito Fan TV on YouTube, because any fan that had watched that game would have said exactly the same thing.
Mm.
You know, I think as fans, you're often sort of... In this category, like, well, when the team wins, everybody's great. But when they lose, which happens sometimes in football, you know, we say, like, oh, our players didn't try, or they didn't work hard enough, or they didn't want it. But it's kind of, it's good and instructive to hear managers saying exactly the same things that fans would say. You know, like, players didn't show enough desire. They didn't want the ball. They didn't want to take shots. They didn't want to win. Or they didn't want to win enough, we should say. And I think that is something that you see it in professional football. You do, and you see it in the J League more than in some other leagues, where players are, you know, go through the motions a little bit, or a lot. And I don't think it does any harm to call out, if you like, grown-ups in the right manner like that. I think it's much worse for when the team puts in a terrible performance. I think it's much worse when the manager, like, tries to defend it in the post-match interview. When Mbappe just stopped running on that counter-attack for PSG, and the manager has to say, oh, well, it's understandable that he was disappointed that the guy didn't pass him the ball. It's like, come on, man. Like, you know,
primary school.
It's pathetic and embarrassing. Like, my son has... oh, God, I'm going to sound like a complete dick now. But, you know, my son has football classes, and when he's done well, I tell him he's done well. But when he's done the wrong thing or made a mistake, I'll tell him that as well. You know, I don't shout about it on YouTube, not yet anyway. but do you know what I mean? It doesn't do anyone any good to pretend like that was a really good performance when it wasn't, you know. So, and yeah, like you said, it had the desired effect. So perhaps we'll see, like, an outbreak of this kind of, like, managers kind of shouting truth bombs into the post-match microphone in the J League. It would be very refreshing if that did happen.
I think also it shows, I think it tells us quite a lot about Akiba's relationship with his players. Because we've seen over the last, is this his third year there? We've seen over the last few years that he's very good at developing players. They get a lot of young players in, they play really well at Mito, and then they move on to something bigger, or they move up in the pyramid or whatever. And so, the fact that he was moved to make this kind of comments or these kinds of comments shows obviously. You know, this was a seriously bad performance. But then to be able to get that reaction and win 2 days later shows that obviously the players weren't. I mean, other clubs in other leagues, a lot of players would have given up if you made those kind of comments about them. They wouldn't have made any effort in the following game to try and get the manager sacked. But whatever he said to them and what he said to the media, obviously. Lit a fire under them, and they went out and they played really well, and they beat was it Oita on Tuesday night. So I think that's quite instructive. It tells us quite a lot about his relationship with the squad, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think it's another sign that I think it's funny because I think that kind of thing will impress just as many potential suitors for Akiba as it puts off. Because I think some bigger clubs would look at that and be like, ooh, you know, we have a few big egos around our club that might not take too kindly to being, you know, outed like that. Mm. Whereas I think a right-minded club, a progressive club, would welcome him in. I guess we're talking about next season here, aren't we, probably? But yeah, I think he's done enough. I mean, you mentioned that Mito haven't been as spectacular this season, although they're in about the right place in the table. I mean, I almost think he is, this season, he has learned to balance the team a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, perhaps he's had the players to balance the team a bit more, whether that's with an eye on wanting to move somewhere else, I don't know. Yeah, it was kind of good. I have to be careful how I phrase this. It was good to see him lose his temper for the right reasons, yeah, in the right way, I think. And it was also good to see him smiling and ranting happily on Tuesday night. I'm sure his wife is relieved as well. He's not banging every door in the house, you know, for an entire week or whatever. So yeah, good stuff. And yeah, I agree with you. A clear red card, Takiki Mai. You're not allowed to put your studs into someone's shin like that. And I think most people. He wasn't really like a high speed collision, was it? You know, it all seemed to happen all very slowly, but it's right. You can't, yeah, right in front of the referee. And if the referee doesn't get out the red card there, then the referee is going to be in trouble with the match commissioner, you know, the referee would have to explain why he didn't give a red card for that. So, yeah, fantastic goal from Tanaka, clear red card. And, as a bonus, yeah, hilarious, and informative post-match interview for possibly one of the first times ever in the J League. They're normally a complete waste of time, aren't they? So yeah, all good. Now, James, we've talked about 3-1-0 home wins, which is pretty uncharacteristic for J2, I feel. Yeah. So we're going to round off with a more traditional, sort of chaotic match. This is a Ryukyu 2 Yamagata 2, such an exciting game, and another dramatic cameo at the end from Ryukyu's godlike goalkeeper Danny Carvajal. So I'm going to try and sort of run through the main events of this game. This might take a minute. Ryukyu are a completely different side, aren't they, under Nacho Fernandez? And they were 1-0 up at the break here thanks to a very cool finish from Takuma Abe. He tucked away a low cross from Makito Uehara in just the 8th minute. At the other end, Ryukyu were indebted to Carvajal early on, as he made a good save from an Akira Disaro header. So Ryukyu 1-0 up at the break. At the start of the second half, Abe nearly made it 2-0 to the hosts, but he was denied by some superb goalkeeping from Masaaki Goto, who was out very quickly to narrow the angle for the striker, so well done to him. From the 64th minute, James, this game went to what I like to call full J-League, as Yamagata equalised, De La Torre converting a left-wing cross from Thiago Alves. Kota Yamada had very cleverly slipped the Portuguese winger through for that one. But yeah, J-League magic. Yamagata were behind again less than 60 seconds later. I think the DAZN graphic for the equaliser was still on the screen when Kazuto Takezawa sent a cross in from the Ryukyu left, and Takuya Hitomi rose highest on the edge of the six-yard box to power it in. So 65th minute, and Ryukyu 2-1 up. This game just had that kind of chaotic energy about it, though, and Yamagata equalised again 9 minutes from full time. De La Torre with a goal that was almost a kind of action replay of the first. This time, Yudai Konishi played in Shuto Kawai down the left channel, and yeah, Kawai's cross was finished off neatly by De La Torre for 2-2. So, in most normal matches, that would be the full story. The players would happily settle for a point each, but it's the J-League, so that wasn't it. And in the last minute of stoppage time in the second half, Yamagata were awarded a penalty after their young striker Yuta Fujihara went down fairly dramatically, I think we can say, in a tangle with, I think it was Takayuki Fukumura, the Ryukyu defender, I think. But yeah, Fujihara took the penalty, and Ryukyu's keeper Carvajal dived brilliantly down to his right to save it and earn his team what could be a very precious point at the end of the season. So yeah, chaotic last 25 minutes, but it finished Ryukyu 2, Yamagata 2. Ryukyu still bottom, but now just 2 points behind Iwate and Gunma above them. Yamagata are 8th. They're only 2 points off the playoffs, so still all to play for them as well. James, Ryukyu 2, Yamagata 2, can you make it make sense?
Yeah, that's more like it, isn't it? None of this 1-0 nonsense. And this is another promising performance from Ryukyu. and they're not playing like the bottom of the league. And like you said, they're a completely different side under Fernandes. He's really galvanised the squad. And I think for UQ to take the lead twice against a playoff chasing team on the back of three straight wins is great. It's great for UQ. Fantastic. To let the lead slip twice, conceding basically identical goals, not so great. And that's something they've got to try and figure out in the last 10 games of the season. And conceding yet another stoppage time penalty is careless in the extreme. Keep doing it. Last week it was the 91st minute. This week the 94th minute. And sooner or later, Carvajal's not going to be able to save them. Although I am looking forward to seeing him save a 99th minute penalty against Mito on Saturday. And I think Yuki are really benefiting from Takuma Abib coming back from injury. His goal here was a really calm finish. That kind of calm heads that they need when things get chaotic, as they often do, when you're bottom of the league. And also a really good header by Hitomi, he's got three goals in two games. And that's great, especially when they needed someone to step up because Sule was suspended and Kelvin wasn't in the squad either. So for Yuku, yeah, good things happening, but also familiar failings that they need to try and solve. As for Yamagata, one should playoff chasers really do better against the team that's bottom? Although I did just say Yuki are not playing like the team that's bottom. So, yeah, to twice go behind, not good, but to twice come back and then almost win it in stoppage time, that is good. Now they're unbeaten in four, so that's promising. Although I saw that Disaro went off on after 30 minutes. I think it was possible concussion or something. I hadn't seen anything else about that, though.
I didn't see that. You spotted something I missed there. Yeah, I'll have to check. I don't think there's been any news since then.
Yeah, no, I just so happened to scroll down past the team lists on the game page in the app, and it said something about, I think it was a concussion sub, but I haven't noticed anything since then. But yeah, Ryukyu they're playing really well, aren't they? They've been entertaining to watch earlier in the season because they were losing some crazy games, and now they're winning or drawing, and it's really entertaining. They're really good to watch in the same way that Olmia are, because Olmia games often follow a similar pattern, which is why those teams are where they are in the league, I guess. But I'm really excited to see what UQ can do in the last 10 games of the season. I have a feeling that they can achieve quite a lot.
Yeah, I've often thought it'd be good if individual players were like mic'd up, you know, so you could hear everything that they're saying during the game. But with Danny Carvajal, because they have that microphone right behind the goal, he doesn't need to be mic'd up. You can hear him swearing in Spanish and encouraging the players around him. He has been so important to what they've done, I think. And I do really like the other guy, the other goalkeeper, Junto Taguchi, as well. But I think Danny Carvajal has just been the influence he has on that back line, and he almost seems to kind of bring them luck. I mean, I guess you could argue repeatedly conceding last minute penalties is unlucky, but the fact that he's keeping them out counts for something. But I think this game was an interesting one in the sense that both teams will be really happy with some aspects of the performance and really annoyed with others. You know, I think if, like you said, if you're a playoff chasing team and you score twice in an away game, you expect to win. And if you're, I think, pretty much any self-respecting professional team, if you score two goals at home, you expect to win. So that the fact that they're coming away with 1 point each will probably kind of annoy both managers. But then if you look at how the game went and the last 20 minutes was sort of like a playground kickabout, really. It was like a basketball game. Then perhaps escaping that with a point is not too bad, you know, not the end of the world. So, but yeah, classic sort of J League, you know, characteristics on display, weren't there, in that game. And yeah, I agree with you. I think to score two goals from Yuki's point of view without Sully being available, that shows what firepower they have that might get them out of trouble. But they also showed the defensive failings that mean they're not going to get out of trouble easily. You know, it's going to be a hard slog from here over the last month or two of the season. And yeah, I think we talked about finishers. Abe is a great finisher. I think inside that 6-yard box, De La Torre is not a bad finisher either. Mm. He managed to score the same goal basically twice, didn't he? You were talking about the PlayStation earlier. That's kind of what it felt like. I think he has been a really good addition to Yamagata's attacking ranks, but they still have their defensive frailties as well. That first goal, I mean, it was a great finish by Abe, but the defending, you know, nobody was really in the right place to cut out that cross or stop the cross coming in. And it's something that is going to hurt them and might mean that they miss out on the playoffs in the final analysis. So I would say, yeah, I kind of always think, if you're another team, do you look forward to playing against Ryukyu and Yamagata, or is it scary? Like, you kind of don't know what you're going to get, right?
Mm.
Yeah, I think when you have to defend against them, it's terrifying. But when you've got the ball and you get past their sort of midfield press, then it's, you know, you always fancy that you're going to get chances and get goals. So, yeah, it was an interesting game, especially that last 25 minutes where everything just sort of went bonkers, didn't it? Yes. Okay. All right. James, talking of going bonkers, let's take a quick recording break here. In a minute, I'll be back. I'm going to do my best to review one game from last midweek, the rest of the round 32 games from the weekend, and also two rearranged games that took place this midweek as well. And if that doesn't finish me off, I'll be back after that with James for a weekend preview as well. So stay tuned. Kind of J2 midweek and weekend roundup is coming up next. Hi again, everyone. John Steele here again, rounding up quite a busy midweek and weekend of J2 action, all being said. Last Wednesday night, August the 17th, Jeff Chiba and Kofu played their rescheduled game from round 28 at Fukuda Denshi Arena, and it finished 0-0 with not a great deal of goalmouth action to talk about. Rui Sueyoshi had Jeff's best chance about 20 minutes from full time, but it was well saved by Kosuke Okanishi in the Kofu goal. Kofu's summer signing, Brazilian defender Eduardo Mancha, made his debut in a back three, but that's about as many talking points as I could make from that game. On to the weekend action then, and there were 9 matches played on Saturday, August the 20th. Now, it should have been 10, but Kanazawa's home game with Nagasaki, as I discussed with James in part 1, was postponed due to COVID-19 cases at Nagasaki. That game's now been rescheduled for Tuesday, September the 6th, with a 7 p.m. kickoff, so that's coming up next month. Now, 4 of the games on Saturday ended in 1-0 home wins. James and I have talked about 3 of those already in part 1, but the 4th of these games saw Yokohama FC stay top of the table with a narrow home win over playoff contenders Okayama. Okayama were without their suspended centre-back Yasutaka Yanagi for this game, and perhaps that was a factor in Yokohama having lots of chances to score in the first half. Inside the first 5 minutes, Koki Ogawa went clean through and was only denied by some heroics from the Okayama keeper Daiki Hotta, and moments later, Sho Ito rattled the post from the edge of the box, and Ogawa should have got a header on target from about 6 yards out, but headed over the bar. But in the end, the leaders had to wait until the 71st minute to get the crucial goal, and it came from a counter-attack following an Okayama corner. A number of visiting players were appealing for a handball inside the Yokohama FC penalty area, but when play continued, the ball was collected by new boy Toa Yamane, and the barrel-chested JTET favourite slipped in Ryoya Yamashita, and he just about got the ball past Hotta for 1-0, and despite some late Okayama pressure, that's how it finished. Yokohama FC 1, Okayama 0. So Yokohama stay top. They're a point ahead of second place Niigata, and perhaps more importantly, 8 points clear of Sendai in third. Okayama, meanwhile, are in fourth place and going well. This was a first defeat in 8 games for them. Fifth placed Machida ended Omiya's recent mini revival, beating their hosts 2-0 at the NAC 5 stadium. Omiya gave a debut to young goalkeeper Manafu Wakabayashi, and he acquitted himself very well overall. However, he was beaten in the 27th minute by Dudu for Machida's opener. The Brazilian striker was able to flick Masayuki Okuyama's right-wing cross over Wakabayashi from about 10 yards. And even though the ball hit the post and defender Shuto Okaniwa did his best to clear, the ball had already crossed the line and the goal was given. Omiya did their best to get back into the game after that, and when their defence was breached, Wakabayashi showed his quality with a great save from Dudu and then another in stoppage time from the young Machida striker Yu Hirakawa. Machida only made the point safe in stoppage time from a corner. Okayama and Kazuma Yamaguchi were given far too much time and space to create a 2v1 situation out on the Machida right, and Yamaguchi's near post cross was expertly converted by Chong Teze for 2-0. And that's how it finished. Omiya 0, Machida 2. Omiya sit in 19th place at the moment, just a single precarious point above the drop zone. But it has to be said, I thought this was a pretty good performance from them overall. In other matches, Jeff Chiba and Tokushima drew 0-0 at Fukuda Denshi Arena. That's a result that doesn't really help either side in their quest to make a late run into the top six. The best moment in this game came towards the end of the first half when Jeff centre-back Shunsuke Nishikubo rattled the post with a great effort from about 30 yards. A fantastic strike, but no goals, and it finished Jeff Chiba 0, Tokushima 0. The game between Tokyo Verdy and Kofu and Ajinomoto also finished goalless, and the closest either side came to breaking the deadlock here was in second half stoppage time when Verdy's Koken Kato put in a shot that hit the underside of the crossbar and bounced down on the goal line without going over. So yeah, Tokyo Verdy 0, Kofu 0 at full time in that one. Meanwhile, Tochigi went goal crazy in their away game at Akita, winning 3-0 at the Soyu Stadium. All three Tochigi goals came in the first half, and it's not often I get to say that. So, yes, they were ahead in just the fourth minute when their rookie striker Kou Miyazaki headed in a deep cross from left from Tepe Yachida. And it was 2-0 midway through the half when Miyazaki couldn't connect properly with a chance. The ball dropped for veteran striker Kisho Yano to score an acrobatic overhead kick from about 6 yards. Now, Yano might be 38 years old, but I think he's more flexible than I've ever been. That's an absolutely fantastic effort to make it 2-0. Brilliant goal. The travelling Tochigi supporters were in dreamland just before the break as Carlos Gutierrez headed a Yachida cross back across goal for Miyazaki to nod in for close range and make it 3-0, which is how things stayed. Akita 0, Tochigi 3 at full time. Tochigi are 8 points clear of the relegation zone in 15th place, with Akita just 1 place and 2 points behind them. Also winning 3-0 were Oita Trinita at home to struggling Iwate, who are back in the relegation zone now after a third straight defeat. Oita did the damage with 2 goals just before the half-time break. Firstly, in the 39th minute, Kazuki Fujimoto's low ball into the penalty area was swept in by Hiroto Nakagawa from about 16 yards. 5 minutes later, it was 2-0. Hiroto Goya did well to play in Masaki Yumiba, and the rookie midfielder unleashed a fierce shot into the top corner from the edge of the penalty area. And the hosts made the point safe with a third goal in the 73rd minute. Asahi Masuyama set up Yamato Machida for a shot on goal, which was actually well saved by Iwate's keeper Taishi Brandon Nozawa, but the ball ran loose and the onrushing Masuyama was able to tuck it in from close range for 3-0. So yes, Oita 3, Iwate 0, the final score. Now, that's all of the weekend action rounded up, but Oita were back in action just 3 days later on Tuesday night, playing their rearranged Ground 28 game away at Mito, but things didn't go as smoothly this time and they were beaten 2-0. Oita made a very bright start to the game, creating several chances, including a volley from Samuel that came back off the base of the post in the 10th minute. But Mito were eager to impress in this game, perhaps after being called out so publicly by their coach Akiba, as we discussed in part one. And Mito scored twice before half-time to seal the points. The opener was a superb individual goal from Kosuke Kinoshita, one of my favourite players this season. who turned his marker Pereira and then held him off with strength out on the left and then cut inside and bent the ball just inside the far post for 1-0 to Mito. That was in the 28th minute and Kinoshita's 11th goal of a very productive season. Then, 6 minutes before the interval, Mizuki Ando swept in a low cross from Fumiya Sugiura to make it 2-0, and that's how things stayed. Mito 2, Oita 0. Oita stay 2 points outside the playoff zone in 9th place, but they've been on a great run of form. This was their first defeat in 11 matches. There was also J2 action on Wednesday night this midweek, with Tokushima picking up a 1-0 win away at Tokyo Verdy. This was a game that had originally been scheduled for round 27. The crucial goal here was scored by Koki Sugimori in first half stoppage time, after he'd been set up by a nice backheel from Shunto Kodama out on the left wing. Sugimori advanced into the penalty area and fired a powerful shot past Matias in the Verdy goal. Driving rain in Tokyo made the pitch conditions pretty difficult at times at Ajinomoto, but Verdy worked hard to try and get back into the game. 10 minutes into the second half, Ren Kato headed Seiya Baba's cross against the bar as the home side threatened to equalise. And right at the end, Verdy's goalkeeper Matias was up at the other end for a last-gasp corner and managed to get a shot which looked like it was heading on target. It was blocked by a defender before it reached the goal. When the ball was cleared down to the other end of the pitch, poor old Matias had to, you know, run all the way back and chase it down. And just as he recovered possession and started to dribble the ball forwards for one last attack, the referee blew the full-time whistle and all his cardio was wasted. But never mind, good fitness work for Matias in the end. But yeah, it finished on Wednesday night, Tokyo Verdy 0, Tokushima 1. Both of these sides are in mid-table in 12th and 13th place, respectively, and not much to choose between them. They have 41 points each. All right, I think that's all of the midweek, weekend, and the following midweek's action taken care of then. Stay tuned. After a quick musical break, I'm back with James, and we're going to preview the round 33 games coming up this weekend. Welcome back, everyone. Hopefully that's all of the J2 matches from the last 10 days or so rounded up as neatly as we can. John Steele here again. I'm back with James. We are going to look ahead to the round 33 games coming up this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, August 27th and 28th. So, James, the bulk of the games are going to be on Saturday for round 33. 3 games at 6 p.m. There's second place Niigata going to Iwate, bottom side Ryukyu going to Mito, and also Kofu hosting Kanazawa. I'm sure there's a sharp intake of breath on the other end of the Skype call for that one. James, if people can choose one of the 6 p.m. games to keep an eye on, which one do you think is the banger?
Mito against Ryukyu, I think. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because we talked earlier about how entertaining Ryukyu are. And also, although we said Mito not being as swashbuckling as in previous years, I still think that they're a good team. They're in 11th. And also, the interesting thing, will they be tired from having played on Tuesday night, or will they be revitalized from having put in such a good performance, having been so bad at the weekend? And if Ryukyu have Sule back and maybe Kelvin back as well, then they'll have that firepower. There's also a chance that Kiyotake and Kusano might be available as they're coming back from injuries. So I think that one will be one to watch.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Yeah, yeah. You're still refusing to describe them as unsexy. I've given you 2 chances to say. Just went fair enough. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think Kanazawa, they're going to have a tough task away at Kofu, aren't they? I think it's fair to say that Kofu gave Ryukyu a good beating a few weeks back. Niigata Iwate, I think at the moment, Iwate are really struggling, and I don't see them giving Niigata too many problems. I expect Niigata will probably win that without too much trouble, but we'll wait to see. How about 7 p.m. then, James? 5 matches coming up at 7 o'clock. There's leaders Yokohama FC. They have quite a tough looking match away at 5th place Machida, something of a kind of Kanto derby. Omiya hosting Yamagata. Nagasaki host Tochigi. Third place Sendai, they need to bounce back from that defeat at Gunma. They're hosting Jeff Chiba, should be all right. And Tokushima take on Yamaguchi. Is there a game or two at 7 o'clock that looks enticing, James?
Yeah, Omiya against Yamagata stands out for me. I think Omiya, can they spring another surprise on a playoff chasing team, having done so well against Sendai and Yokohama FC, and not played too badly against Machida the other day, although they lost. Whereas Yamagata, they will be annoyed with the way they only drew to with Ryukyu. So they'll want to, although, you know, they're unbeaten in four, so they'll want to continue that and make up that 2-point difference to sixth place. Mm. So I think that one will be good. What about you? What do you think for Saturday's games?
Well, I just got a feeling Yokohama FC away at Machida. Yokohama FC have been winning the last couple of games, but they haven't really been blowing anybody's socks off, I don't think. As we mentioned, obviously they had the 1-0 against Okayama last weekend, which was quite fortunate, and then 1-0 against Gunma. They were very lucky to get that, I think, in the overall balance of play. So I just wonder if they're not, if their performance levels aren't right. Machida is perhaps the wrong place to be going to when you're not really at your best. I think Machida are another team that blow a little bit hot or cold, but I think there's a possibility for Yokohama FC getting into some trouble in that game, I think. And Sendai against Jeff Chiba, I was kind of joking about how Jeff can be a bit of a charity case sometimes and help out a team that needs a win. Sometimes, what am I talking about? It's like over the last 10 years. It's quite a long period of charity. I think Sendai, there'll be some nerves, I think, at the moment because they're close to being kind of cut adrift from that top two. It was a top three for a while, wasn't it? Yokohama, Niigata, and Senna. Now it's starting to look like a top two. Jeff, they're not the finished article by any means, and they're prone to disastrous self-destruction like a lot of J2 teams are, but I think they could give Sendai some problems in that game, and I think especially if Jeff can score first, Sendai's nerves will be jangling even more. That could be an interesting match if Jeff score first, I think. I've been wrong many times, especially about Jeff. So let's not hang our hats too confidently on that one. How about Sunday, James? The other three games from round 33 coming up on Sunday. They're sort of staggered in a kind of pleasing but also slightly annoying way, that in that you still have to choose only one to watch live. At 6 p.m. it's Akita against Oita. At 7 p.m. Kumamoto hosting Tokyo Verdy, and then at 7:30 Gunma against Okayama. So Gunma having another home game against the High Flyer in succession, I guess, after the Sendai game last weekend. And which one of these do you think looks the most interesting?
I'll go with Gunma against Okayama, simply because of the reason you just mentioned, another tough game for Gunma, and they, like we said earlier, they really need to string results together. One win on its own is not enough. They need something from this. The other two games look interesting as well, though. I mean, Oita keeps spurning opportunities to actually move into the top six, and they've been hanging around just on the outside. And Verdy, they really need to win against Kumamoto to keep their slim playoff hopes alive, I think.
Well, I think those two matches, Akita, Oita, Kumamoto against Verdy, they're all four teams that have lost the previous game, right? So they all need a reaction. I think Oita, they play some quite pretty football, but they have a bit of a soft centre. Mm. Like there wasn't really much in that game against Mito on Tuesday, but Mito suddenly scored twice and the game was over. And Akita, perhaps, I'm not trying to have a go at them here, but perhaps it's the opposite. They don't play that much pretty football, but they have a very hard centre. But that was kind of absent, wasn't it, when they lost 3-0 against Tochigi in the previous game. Kisho Yano's overhead kick was very, very special in that game. And then Kumamoto and Verdy, while they've lost 1-0 in slightly different circumstances, I think Kumamoto losing 1-0 at Niigata, not too bad. Verdi, not too long before we started recording tonight, they've lost 1-0 at home to Tokushima, which is probably quite an annoying result for them. So I think they'll all be looking to varying degrees to bounce back. So I think there's some interest in those games as well. And we even have, yet again, James, the schedulers are really keeping us on our toes at the moment. So there's another midweek game coming up on Wednesday, August the 31st. Now, it starts at 7 p.m. It's Yamagata against Okayama. And this is the game that was completed but then annulled back in round 8. Is that right, James? Because Yamagata's goalkeeper, Goto, was wrongly sent off for handling a back pass that was classed as denial of a goal-scoring opportunity. So after much confusion, and I think the JFA or the J-League had to write a letter to IFAB and ask them what the hell to do with this match, they're going to replay the game, but they're going to start from the 11th minute. So it's a 7 p.m. kickoff, but you're only going to get the last 79 minutes, because they're going to start from the clock will be from the 11th minute in that game. So yeah, never a dull moment, James, in the J League.
Yeah, and it's going to start with the indirect free kick as well. So I'm hoping that they'll do like what I can't remember which team it was, but a team did against FC Tokyo earlier in the season. They had an indirect free kick on the edge of the 6-yard box, and then just players kept running up and dummying it to get players to run out of the wall and get booked. And I hope that they just do that.
I can't remember. It sounds like a Tosu. Yeah.
About 20 minutes. I'd quite enjoy that.
Yeah, it's a bit like a Monty Python, you know, Knights Usaini kind of vibe. Yeah, I think if nothing else, I will. If I'm free, I'll try to tune in just for the start of that game. I'm not sure we can call it the kickoff because, like you said, it's not going to start with a kickoff.
Start.
The face off, the tip off.
Face off is
tee off.
Well, I think we talked about the fixtures and stuff, but we've got 10 games. 10 or 11 games for teams. I think what's really good at this stage of the season is that every team has something to play for, all the way down to Tokushima, Verdi and Kofu on 41 points, 12th, 13th and 14th. They're only 7 points off 6th, so they still mathematically can make the playoffs, although it's a slim chance. 15th, Tochigi on 38 points, 8 points clear of relegation, but still not out of the woods yet.
You're 8 points clear of relegation, but you're Tochigi. It's like, what was that? It's like that Twitter meme, like, she's a 10, but.
So I think, I mean, they can't afford to slack off. And so I think, yeah, and obviously all the teams below them as well have got to do what they can to avoid slipping into the bottom two. And the bottom teams in the bottom two obviously need to get out. So all 22 teams have got something to play for, which is great, because I mean, last year, quite early on in the season, the top two was already sewn up and there were no playoffs. And so, yeah, it's really exciting. They're coming to the end of the season. It's going to be...
Yeah, I think you're right. I think last year it seemed easier to kind of choose which games to focus on in each round by this point. But I don't know. Yeah, it just seems to be a bit more congested, a bit tighter and a bit more exciting this season. So yeah, hopefully we can carry on making sense of it for the last 10 rounds, and things will be even more exciting right up until the last day. But James, I think that's about all the excitement we can muster this week. So thanks for all of your insights. Always a pleasure to chat, especially after I've had a holiday. So a lot of this was new information for me. I haven't been across the J-League games as much as usual. So thanks for coming on. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thanks very much.
Wicked. Okay, nobody says wicked anymore, but I just am trying to bring it back. Slowly. All right, that's all from us, I think, from James and me for this section of the pod. But please stay tuned, because as usual, in a moment, you're going to hear Mike Innes. He's got all of the latest J3 news in J-Talk Short Corner. And there's some pretty big results in the J3 weekend as well. So yeah, please stay tuned for that. Mike Innes is coming up soon. But as usual, thank you for listening and downloading the pod. And if you're a Patreon supporter of JTET and the big JTalk podcast, we really appreciate that. So yeah, thanks for your support. And please stay tuned. Mike and all the J3 news is coming up next. JTalk, it's your time.
Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on an important set of fixtures in Round 21, as well as previewing the Round 22 games coming up this weekend. First, a few items of J3 news since the last pod. Katare Toyama have confirmed the signing of former China under-23 international midfielder Chen Binbin. The 24-year-old is loaned from Shanghai Port FC until the end of the season, and in so doing becomes the 20th Chinese player to move to the J-League. The postponed Round 20 game between SC Sagamihara and Fukushima United has been rescheduled for the evening of Tuesday the 30th of August at the Sagamihara Gion Stadium. Meanwhile, the J-League have announced the winners of the Player, Coach and Goal of the Month awards for July. The first two reflect Fujieda MyFC's rise up the table as right-sided midfielder Tojiro Kubo takes the player prize and Daisuke Sudo is named Coach of the Month after the team won all five of their July matches. The goal choice is Daisuke Matsui's dink over the keeper for YSCC Yokohama against Vanrare Hachinohe in Round 16. Congratulations to all concerned. Now on to the action and the Round 21 fixtures, with four games on Saturday the 20th of August being completed. The scheduled fixture between FC Gifu and Fujieda MyFC was abandoned due to stormy conditions at Nagaragawa, with Fujieda leading 1-0 at the time the match was called off. Iwaki FC consolidated their position at the top of the J3 table with a comfortable win in the prefectural derby at home to Fukushima United. The wet weather didn't put off the local supporters, a club record 3,120 turning out at the J Village. And they didn't have to wait too long for the first goal, Hiroto Iwabuchi giving Iwaki the lead in the 12th minute when he picked up a defensive header by Fukushima's Shun Obu, took one touch to control it and a second to crash his shot off the inside of the far post. An eighth goal of the season for 24-year-old Iwabuchi, one of J3's standout players this year. His team extended their lead in very fortunate circumstances midway through the first half. Ryo Arita playing a ball into the goal area, Sho Suzuki poking in a shot that was blocked by keeper Kaito Yamamoto, but struck Riku Hashimoto and rebounded back over the line for an own goal. In a rare attack, Fukushima did manage to pull one back just before half-time. Uheiji Uehata playing the ball into the box for Hiroto Yukie in space at the far post, from where he fed in a low cross that Yuta Nobe converted from close range. Iwaki, hunting in packs and never afraid to commit men forward, made it 3-1 in the 52nd minute, Ryo Arita getting on the end of Kotaro Anima's through pass and beating Yamamoto with his angled shot. 4 in 4 games now for rookie Arita. Mention must be made of a sumptuous volley by Riku Saga, which hit the bar as Iwaki pushed for a fourth, which they did go on to record in the 89th minute when Saga received a delicious diagonal pass from Reo Sugiyama and knocked it back across goal for Shu Yoshizawa to score his first J-League goal. Final score, Iwaki 4, Fukushima 1. Hiromasa Suguri's Iwaki becoming increasingly difficult to bet against for a top 2 finish. The days when Toshihiro Hattori's Fukushima were among the division's pace-setters now a distant memory. Hanging on in there behind Iwaki are Kagoshima United, who stayed in second place as a result of their scrapped-out win at SC Sagamihara. Naoto Otake's team had multiple near misses, off-target headers from Corky Arita and Frank Romero, a thumping shot against the bar by Yuji Kimura, but didn't make the breakthrough until the 61st minute when Romero's reverse pass found Arita in space and his low shot was deflected past Kentaro Kakoi by the unlucky Hiroki Mizumoto. Not a thing of beauty, but they do indeed all count. For the toothless home side, striker Takumi Kato made a late substitute appearance to mark his return from injury, and boy do Sagamihara need Kato to start finding the net again soon. Final score, Sagamihara 0, Kagoshima 1. Norihiro Satsukawa's side comprehensively outplayed as their massively disappointing season goes on. Kagoshima, not surprisingly missing Rei Yonezawa, should have won far more easily, but they take home the points. Elsewhere on Saturday, there were a pair of matches crucial to the hopes of teams battling to catch up with Iwaki and Kagoshima. Two of those teams met at Katare Toyama, where the visitors were Ehime FC, winners of their last five games and scorers of 7 goals in the round 20 thrashing of Gainare Tottori. For their part, Toyama came into the fixture with only 8 points from their previous 6 outings, not promotion form. In an even first half, though, Katare got their noses in front just after the half hour when Daichi Matsuoka swung in a corner. Ex-Ehime defender Makoto Rindo got his head to it at the near post, and the ball nicked off current Ehime defender Naoki Kuriyama on its way into the net. Having failed to carve out any clear-cut chances for an equaliser, the Mighty Mikans did pull level on 65 minutes via an own goal, Shunsuke Motegi's lofted free kick into the Toyama box, headed past his own keeper by Yohei Ono. In the remaining period, the hosts looked the likelier to score, Naoto Ando hammering a 15-yard shot against the bar. And in the last minute of the 90, they nicked a winner. Daiki Yagishita's ball into the box, ricocheting off both Kenta Uchida and Takashi Kondo to reach Nobuyuki Shina, who reacted quickly to steer the ball round Kenta Tokushige, with the Ehime defence claiming offside. Final score, Toyama 2, Ehime 1, a huge boost to Katare's promotion push. Ehime slip out of the top 6 and are now 7 points off the pace. That still puts them one better off than AC Nagano Parseiro, who took their 6-game unbeaten run to struggling Vanrare Hachinohe and lost. Nagano did go in front 10 minutes before the break when the home side weren't able to clear their lines at a corner. Hayate Sugi played a high ball back into the danger zone and Hayato Ikegaya jabbed it over the line at the far post. After the restart, however, Vanrare displayed an uncharacteristic resilience, pulling level with a 50th minute penalty by Ryusei Nose, awarded when Nose's own cross was handled by Takuya Akiyama. 12 minutes later, they went in front, Yuki Aida cutting inside to evade Masaki Miyasaka before shooting past Kim Min-ho in the Parseiro goal. Hachinohe scored a third with 19 minutes left, the first time they've hit 3 in a league game since June last year. A goalmouth scramble ended by Yusei Kayanuma's decisive shot from 8 yards out. Nagano did push to get back in the game, Akiyama and substitute Carlos Duke going close, but it ended Hachinohe 3, Nagano 1. Vanrare jump out of the bottom 4 via their second win in 3 games. A curiously tame performance from Parseiro, significant damage to their promotion hopes.
J-Talk Extra Time.
The main focus of attention among the four matches played on Sunday the 21st was to see if Matsumoto Yamaga could break out of their run of a single point from the previous three games as they headed down to Giravans Kitakyushu. After his error at YSCC Yokohama in round 20, it was good to see Giravans keeper Yuki Kato make a string of excellent saves as the defence in front of him struggled to cope with the mobility and strength of Lukao and Ayumu Yokoyama. But Kato could have intervened as Matsumoto grabbed the win via a 58th minute goal in which Kazuhiro Sato delivered a high free kick into the box. Takato Nonomura nodded it back across the face of goal, and Masato Tokida glanced in the header. Final score, Kitakyushu 0, Matsumoto 1. Not a surprising result, but further evidence that Giravans are now assimilated into the bottom half of J3. For Yamaga, a crucial victory which keeps them in third place. On the fringes of the promotion battle are FC Imabari, now unbeaten in 9 thanks to their home win in the Shikoku Derby with Kamatamari Sanuki. Kazuaki Hashikawa's team made a bit of a sluggish start and Sanuki had a couple of half chances, but Imabari opened the scoring in the 40th minute, Yuta Mikado leading a counter-attack before feeding teenage striker Kanta Chiba for a composed finish from 20 yards. 4 minutes into the second half, though, the Noodle Boys stunned the home crowd by pulling level. Ikki Kawasaki crossing from the right, Masataka Nishimoto heading it on at the near post, Wataru Sasaki rounding off an accomplished move from close range. Kamatamari are a good example of a team who are especially vulnerable after they've just scored, though, and in the 53rd minute, they fell behind again, Tomoya Ando scoring a penalty for Imabari after Takatora Kondo's shot had struck the arm of Keitaro Iori. Homekeeper Shu Mogi had one or two wobbles in the remaining period, but Imabari managed to keep the visitors at arm's length, and it ended Imabari 2, Sanuki 1. Not the most convincing of performances, but the hosts stay in touch at the top, while Kamatamari slip into the bottom three for the first time this season. Gathering together points just beneath them, however, are YSCC Yokohama, whose defeat of Azul Claro Numazu at Mitsuzawa was a second consecutive win for the division's bottom side. Most unexpectedly, this was a game that turned out to be an exhibition of J3 sharpshooting at its best. Yes, I do know what I've just said. The show began in only the 10th minute. Numazu's Ryoma Kita, 25 yards inside his own half, picking up a loose pass by YSCC captain Kento Dorate, racing towards the opposition penalty area and 25 yards out, arrowing his shot into the top corner. But the home side were behind for only 4 minutes as Shuntaro Koga, a recent signing from Australian football, gained possession in midfield and found Shuntaro Kawabe, who got the better of Tomoki Fujisaki and shot past Hiromu Musha from 15 yards out. Fujisaki was also found wanting in the 29th minute when he couldn't get close enough to Yumemi Kanda, who cut inside and sent a right-footed shot arcing beyond Musha and into the corner. YSCC were 3-1 up at half-time, Dodate playing a long ball over the top, Yutaro Yanagi beating the offside trap, striking Musha with his first attempt, but then rolling his second past the keeper and into an empty net. Azul Claro coach Masataka Imai introduced Malaysian forward Hadi Fayad on the hour in an attempt to turn things around, but the next score was again by YSCC. With 11 minutes remaining, Numazu defender Tatsuya Anzai couldn't control a loose ball on the edge of the area, and it fell to Ryotaro Yamamoto, who lashed home an unstoppable first-time shot. Azul Claro did get one back in the 90th minute, Yuman Mori registering his first J-League goal with a clever finish from a tight angle after a good team move down the left-hand side. And so it ended YSCC 4, Numazu 2. YSCC able to take advantage of an Azul Claro defence that seemed to sleepwalk through the game. Some of the shooting, though, collector's items. And finally, for round 21, the extent of this year's sad decline of Tegevajaro Miyazaki was underlined by their loss at home to Gainare Tottori. Coach Yasushi Takasaki has a slow, ponderous team that doesn't seem to have the fight required to end their winless streak, now standing at 10 matches. Takasaki's side has had bad luck with injuries, especially in the defence, but more seriously, there appears to be little in the way of a work ethic in the squad. Gainare, for their part, took the lead early in the second half in controversial circumstances, Yuya Taguchi looking clearly offside when he backheeled Mun Inju's cross to Naoya Senoo, who had plenty of time to place his right foot shot into the bottom corner. It was game over in the 63rd minute, Taiki Anai lobbing a ball over the cross for Daichi Ishikawa, who made a simple run between defenders Yudai Okuda and Kenji Dai to finish with his left foot. Final score, Miyazaki 0, Tottori 2. Tegevajaro showing no sign of ending their run of games without a victory. Gainare got lucky with the first goal, but never had to break sweat for a rare clean sheet. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 21, noting that Fujieda now have two games in hand. Fukushima, Gifu, Numazu and Sagamihara all have one. The top six teams are Iwaki with 45 points, Kagoshima have 44, then it's Matsumoto with 41, Toyama 39, and with 38, it's Fujieda and Imabari. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are Sagamihara, Sanuki and Tottori, all with 18 points. Still bottom, but now with 14, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 22 fixtures this weekend, and there are six games on Saturday the 27th of August. It's fifth against first, the two teams with the best attacking records in the division, Fujieda against Iwaki. Having moved back up to third, Matsumoto still need points from their home game with Senuki. Fourth-placed Toyama head down the Japan Sea coast to Tottori. Can Ehime bounce back from their late round 21 defeat? They're at home to Gifu. A couple of fixtures featuring the also-rans as well. Fukushima against Hachinohe and Numazu against Sagamihara. The other three matches are on Sunday the 28th. Second place Kagoshima are in for a tough match at home to one of the division's form teams, Imabari. Nagano have a must-win game as they host Kita Kyushu. Can YSCC make it three victories in a row? They have a decent chance as they visit Miyazaki. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.